Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Horror Weekly Underrated Creature Features. We asked 500,000 horror fans online what their favorite lesser-known creature features are, and we're here with their answers and ours. Forgive my voice, I'm battling an illness, but I decided in honor of the many creatures we're going to be talking about today that fought through dynamite and hails of bullets and spears and recording star Meatloaf. If you can make it through all of that as a creature in a horror movie, then I can certainly make it through this podcast episode. Hopefully you can make it through hearing my scratchy voice. The inspiration for this is that I feel like the last few episodes I've been too serious. I wanted to get to some so bad they're good, or so maybe not bad isn't that the right word. Actually, we're going to cover that in a second. But creature features tend to be on the more fun side of the horror subgenre mix. So I really wanted to have an episode where I just got to really have a good time watching them, have a good time hearing what you all had to say about them, and then a good time talking about it. Which is going to make this digression I'm about to make kind of a whiplash moment, for which I'm sorry. So we're going to talk about a couple of the personal picks that I want to throw in. We're going to talk about the voting, where I was stunned, absolutely stunned by the movies that ended up being in the top five of the votes, at least, if not the top 10. The one who was the runner-up movie in the voting is a movie that I've evangelized for years, a movie that I've really, really liked, although it's the flip side of the fun creature feature thing. It's a really bleak movie. But I was just astonished that it got as many votes as it did. So we'll get to all that. But first, I want to talk about something that I've been experiencing in the online horror community, not ours so much, but just because I spent a lot of time doing research for this podcast and just for love of the genre, just following a lot of people and seeing a lot of discussions online about this genre. And, you know, believe me, I'm sure it was the same in the 70s and the 80s. I'm sure the only differences here are cosmetic or, you know, due to things like rampant social media or how we talk about things online now. But the first film I'm going to talk about, a film I really, really love, if you asked me if this movie was good or bad, my answer would be yes. And I think there are a lot of movies where an ambivalent answer like that makes sense. But I'm finding that attitude is kind of eaten the entire horror community alive, at least from the discussions that I've been seeing for the last, say, couple of years. So what do I mean by that? If Horror Weekly, which again has more than 500,000 followers, so we're getting a lot of feedback, right? Like, so it's a pretty representative sample of online horror opinion. If we post something like John Carpenter's Halloween is a perfect movie, we will now get blowback for that. Like, other Halloween movies are better, or other John Carpenter movies are better, or Halloween is slow, or it didn't age well, etc. Now, again, it's a minority opinion, but it's a lot more blowback than we've ever gotten. I mean, Horror Weekly started in 2016, and I would say for the first 4-5 years at least of its existence, anytime we would say something like Halloween is a perfect movie, there might be one or two, you know, commenters saying disagree, but not to the extent that we've been seeing lately. And it's not just us. Like, I see it in a lot of online groups. I see it in a lot of forums. And, you know, the flip side of that is true. Now, one of the remakes modern horror remakes that I hated the most was the Poltergeist remake. And again, you know, everyone has an opinion. So if you love the Poltergeist remake, more power to you. If you have reasons for loving it, that's even better, because then we can have a discussion about it. If your reason is just, you know, I dug it, or I saw it at the right time in my life, and you know, I just, it brings back good memories for me or whatever, that's individual to you, right? That's not an argument that the movie's well made particularly. It's just an argument of how you're taking it. But now if I post something like the Poltergeist remake was a crime against nature, there will be so much blowback. There will be so many comments that are like, actually, that movie's great. Or, you know, actually, it's really good. Arguments that it's well done, that it was well executed. Even people saying that it's better than the original, which I find, frankly, insane. And seeing this change in the nature of how discussions play out online about horror movies and TV shows and books, it made me think of something that I wanted to think through with you all and then get feedback from anyone who cares to give feedback, because I'm not even really sure how I feel about this. It's just something that occurred to me. So the NBA playoffs are happening right now, and the two, there's three expert commentators saying that, using that term loosely, or sets of them that probably have the largest audience reach, at least as far as I'm aware. One is the Inside the NBA show on TNT, which is a phenomenal show, the best sports show on television, in my opinion. Stephen A. Smith, who I never watch, and Bill Simmons, who has the largest sports podcast. Now, what has happened recently is Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley on the NBA show on TNT have made some pronouncements that, for example, that the Timberwolves were going to sweep the Denver Nuggets after the Denver Nuggets went down 0-2 in the series. And a lot of people, Bill Simmons included, saying that Oklahoma City Thunder are a way better team than the Dallas Mavericks and they'll just wipe them out. And of course, none of this happened, right? The Nuggets have pushed the series to the brink with three consecutive wins, two of them not even at home, to make the Timberwolves look way worse than they looked a week ago. And the Thunder just lost to the Mavericks and might be losing the series since they're down 2-3. So why am I talking about this? Well, you know, when you listen to Bill Simmons or watch Charles Barkley and Shaquille O'Neal do their thing and say, here's what I think is going to happen, they have a lot of expertise on it. They bring up a lot of points, and all the points they say are true. They talk about players' strengths and weaknesses, and they're all accurate, right? Bill Simmons brings up points about why he thinks the Thunder have more talent en masse than just the Dallas Mavericks, which basically is a two-player superstar team with a bunch of add-ons, at least how he was talking about it, right? And all of this is accurate. And even more interesting is they have millions of dollars of support, right? They have people who do research on the staff. They put together videos that prove their points and show exactly what they're talking about. And everything they're saying is accurate. It's their conclusions that are wrong. Now, I noticed a lot of similarities between the way they behave and the way movie critics and people in online horror communities who care, who like are really thoughtful about what they say, how they argue their points. They bring up things that they see in the films in terms of the craft of how they're made, the strength of the acting performances, the cinematography, the music. They make really detailed videos on TikTok, kind of explaining, or YouTube, explaining what they're talking about. They even bring some of their own personality to it, like Chris Stuckman, who we'll talk about in a second. They'll do really thoughtful, laid out arguments on Letterboxd. And after all that, they'll be like, so the conclusion is Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell is great. And then I'll post about Drag Me to Hell, and literally half the responses will be Drag Me to Hell is a huge disappointment, a terrible movie with a really dumb ending. So they have the right arguments. They're saying accurate things about the movies they're reviewing. And then to a lot of you, they're making the wrong conclusions, just like the NBA experts we were talking about. And, you know, saying a movie is good or great or horrible is kind of making a bet with the future. Or in the case of older movies, if you're saying it about those, it's making a bet against the present, I suppose. Now, if you're saying a movie is your favorite or you love it, that's different. That's totally subjective. That's a feeling thing. It's when you start talking about how movies are really good or well-made or better than other movies that you're making a quality judgment. And there's a quality judgment that's been made in the world en masse by anyone who's seen those movies. Now, a lot of times we only have flawed ways to figure that out. Aggregator sites like Rotten Tomatoes, which are really corrupt and inaccurate in a lot of senses, although they generally seem to get things right just by the force of statistical aggregation. Rotten Tomatoes or Metacritic are not right in every case by any means, but directionally, they're accurate. I've found that out of, like, if I looked at 100 Rotten Tomato ratings, I'd say like 20 out of the 100 I consider badly wrong, right? So that's an 80% accuracy. Like, I certify that their accuracy as sort of fresh. Again, they can be horribly wrong in individual cases. But let's do a thought experiment. Let's say that you went to a horror convention, and in that auditorium, they put 1,000 horror fans, just whoever randomly showed up. The only thing is, because the ticket price is high and there's nothing they're going to get out of being there, they're not there to be influencers or whatever, they're just there to hear a presentation. They're presumably all passionate horror fans. So you've got 1,000 randomly selected horror fans. Now imagine you walking onto the stage and grabbing the microphone and saying, Fright Night Part 2 is one of the best horror sequels ever made. And then pausing to get an audience reaction. What do you think the audience reaction is going to be? How many people are going to clap and cheer for that? How many people are going to sit silent? How many people are going to boo? Now, use that example for any movie, like anything that you would say. Like, take a movie, let's say that there's a movie that you really like that's divisive, like the 2011 The Thing prequel. You've got 1,000 horror fans sitting out there listening, hanging on your every word when you're speaking into the microphone. How are they going to react when you try to tell them that you think that's a really good movie? Or sticking with the Thing example, let's say you stride up there on stage and try to make the argument that Howard Hawks' The Thing from Another World, the original, is just as good as John Carpenter's. How's the audience going to react? So there is a horror opinion out there, right? Like, if you were in certain scenarios, you could get that horror opinion in real time. Now, you can be the kind of person that walks around and, like, says John Carpenter's The Thing is totally overrated, which, by the way, I've seen this comment on our pages a few times, and that it's not nearly as good as people say it is. But, like, you're almost alone there, right? I mean, you would have been right in place when it first came out because that movie was panned and wasn't particularly highly regarded. But the consensus over time has settled in that is one of the greatest horror movies ever made. So you walk around and say that it's terrible, and then when you die, your friends give the eulogy, and then they're standing there after the eulogy, like, you know, just talking about you and, like, the things they remember about you, and then they're like, oh man, you remember, like, Johnny was always talking about how The Thing was a terrible movie? What a stubborn guy he was. I mean, he's so fun. He was hilarious. I'm going to miss, like, whatever, but man, he was so wrong. So in that case, you've made a bet against horror opinion, and you're wrong. You lost your bet against the consensus, right? But most movies don't fall into that range. I posted about Drag Me to Hell on our page. Actually, the post was a hilarious Twitter response that the actor Alison Lohman made, who was the star of Drag Me to Hell, when the Netflix had tweeted, we've come to the conclusion that the ending of Drag Me to Hell is perfect. And it's got an image of Alison Lohman's character being dragged through the train tracks with Justin Long's face agape standing above as she gets pulled to hell. And then her Twitter response was, I strongly disagree that that's a perfect ending. And that's just a joke. She's being funny. She's like, you know, I got dragged to hell. Like, you guys are all saying that was a great ending. But, like, I would have liked to see my character have a better outcome. So the point of the post was that she made a good joke, that I like when actors publicly identify with their characters, like when Hannibal Lecter pretended, and when Anthony Hopkins pretended to eat the Oscar statue he got for playing Hannibal Lecter, you know, showing that, you know, I'll eat anything. But even though the point of that post wasn't the ending of Drag Me to Hell, the point was that Alison Lohman is funny, there were hundreds of comments under the post arguing about whether Drag Me to Hell, A, had a good ending or not, and B, whether it was good or bad. And it was pretty much split. It was 50-50. Half of you fucking hate it. Half of you thought it was great. But here's my point to all this, which is when Charles Barkley and Shaq are wrong about their predictions about what's going to happen in a series, win or lose, we don't care. Nobody cares. It's not like their ratings go down if they're wrong all the time. It's a running joke on Inside the NBA that Charles Barkley is famously wrong about his predictions, that when he says something's guaranteed, it's not going to happen, and that when he predicts someone's going to win, he's almost like jinxing that team. But wait a minute, isn't he supposed to be an expert? Like, isn't he supposed to, like, it'd be like going to your tax attorney and saying, you know, I need, five pieces of advice, and three of the pieces of advice he gives you are bad. Like, an expert's supposed to be able to predict outcomes. But that's not how it works with sports. And I don't think it's how it works with movies, actually. When Shaq and Chuck are wrong, we forget that they're wrong or turn it into even more entertainment for ourselves. The other people on the set make fun of them for being wrong. It becomes memes. People talk about it. We don't hold it against them that they're wrong. But when they're right, we're like, well, of course they were right. I saw them make an argument and their argument made sense. They had video to support it. They were making great points about the players and the strategies and the coaches. So of course they got it right. They're experts. Now, why is that? It's because it's the argument that's important. It's the discussion that's important. It's not the prediction. It's not the thing you say at the end of it to say, this is going to be X or X is good. It's all the fun stuff you did arguing with yourself or with your friends or whoever. It's when Shaq and Chuck are going back and forth saying, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, etc. It's not the outcome that's important. It's the discussion. And this is the spirit in which I tried to build Horror Weekly. I see, not just sometimes with us, even though as hard as I fight against it, and a lot of you do, you too. You're supporting me. So, like, a lot of you get what's trying to happen here. You're even better at it than I am, to be honest. I see, like, really thoughtful discussions happening in the comments under our posts that make the points way more eloquently than I could. But everyone gets too hung up, a lot of people get too hung up all the time in these discussions in the I'm right, you're wrong, that movie sucks kind of discussion. And I just think when you're doing that, when I do that, we're putting the emphasis in the wrong place. I did a post on Event Horizon, and there were a lot of people who came in and were talking about how fun it was for them to remember how much that movie scared them. And it scared them in a different way than most other horror movies have, and that they have vivid memories of when it scared them. But charging in came literally hundreds of commenters saying, that movie fucking sucked. If you like that movie, you're dumb. Like, all this like personal attack, judgment shit. But when you say stuff like that, not that I didn't like Event Horizon, not that I didn't care for it, but when we say things like it's bad, or it's a terribly made movie, or nothing, there's nothing scary about it, just imagine, because you're making a bet, just like Shaq and Chuck do, you're making a bet against that movie, right? Now imagine instead of being able to say that just online in a comment on a post, that you have to walk into that auditorium of 1,000 horror fans and you have to yell that into the microphone and see what happens. Are you sure? Are you sure that more than half that audience is going to clap and agree with you? You might be surprised, but just like with the expert online, like review, the critics and the commentators and et cetera, it's way less important that you're quote right or wrong, and way more important the discussion you have leading into it. And just saying it sucks isn't enough. Now, Chris Stuckman, who, as far as I can tell, is the most influential reviewer in the new formats, like in the video social media space formats that has taken over from like the Siskel and Ebert model of times past. As far as I can tell, he loves 99 out of every 100 movies he reviews. Now, I'm much more willing to be negative about things than he is. It's an ethical standard that he seems to have about positivity. Which is fine. It's fair enough. It's working for him and it's his nature. Like, you should be true to your nature. But I find it impossible to believe that out of 100 horror movies made in the last, you know, year, let's say, that 99 of them are good. But again, if you're following the point, that doesn't matter so much. It's not the right or wrong that matters. It's the argument. I have seen Chris Stuckman videos where he has said that he thought a movie was really good, and then he gave five reasons why. And the things he said in the reasons made me to suspect that I wouldn't like the movie. So at the end of the video, when he goes, "I recommend you go see this, I think it's great," I'm like, "No, thank you." from his review, his positive review, because the argument he makes, the points he makes, are things that tell me that that movie is not going to be for me. It's not about right or wrong. It's about how you get there. So I don't talk that much on this podcast about my views on the horror community or even on the venture of Horror Weekly itself, aside from just to thank you all and appreciate that it exists at all. But for some reason, I felt moved to do this in this episode because there are a lot of movies here where I've seen discussions online splitting about whether these movies are good or bad. And the first one we're going to talk about is the movie Alligator from 1980. Alligator is 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's 46% in the audience score, and it gets a one-star scathing review from Roger Ebert. And I know you're thinking, well, Roger Ebert hates all horror movies, but that is so wrong. Like, Roger Ebert supported and found a lot of horror movies early on. I don't want to get into this. We've talked about not movies long enough on this podcast, but he was biased against horror. I believe that, like, generally speaking, it was a little, it would exert a little pressure on his reviews if it was from the horror genre. But if he loved a horror movie like Body Snatchers, I think 1993, which is a great movie, he was one of the very few people who threw down for it in support of it and had really thoughtful reviews of it. So why is Alligator a movie that is like split divisively by horror fans, loved by some horror critics, loathed by some of the most important ones? Why is it a movie when you ask me if it's good or if it's bad? I say yes. But as per the point of my ridiculous preamble that led up to all this, good or bad, these are quality judgments. Like, and I can point to either way in either direction for this movie. But do I love it? Like, how do I feel about it? I fucking love this movie. If you haven't seen it, the logline for the movie is a herpetologist helps a detective track her flushed away pet, now a king-size mutant named Ramon. Amazing. Alligator was written by John Sayles, who also wrote the Roger Corman, RIP, We Miss You Legend, classic Piranha. But more interestingly, it was directed by Louis Teague. Louis Teague had a classmate in New York City for a film named Martin Scorsese, who recommended Louis Teague for a job at New World Pictures, believing in his talent. At the time that he was doing Alligator, he was also shooting directing Second Unit for Sam Fuller's The Big Red One, Samuel Fuller, one of America's greatest directors. Louis Teague went on to direct Cujo, Cat's Eye, and The Jewel of the Nile. Now, Alligator to me is proof that if you get one thing in your movie so right, so spectacularly right, that your movie becomes almost unsingable. And what Alligator did was cast Robert Forster, one of my favorite actors of all time, as the basically Chief Brody character, because Alligator is sort of a Jaws ripoff. Now, if we're following the Jaws model here, then our Quint character is going to be Henry Silva's character, Colonel Brock the Big Game Hunter. And the mayor character is going to be the actual mayor, crossed with the chief of police, the person who's getting in Robert Forster's way. He's like the detective in charge of this whole shutdown, the alligator attacks operation. But his boss is hilarious and incompetent and hot-headed. So that's not really a character we had in Jaws, unless you count all the idiots in the boats going out to throw dynamite into the water. But no one was getting into in Brody's way except for the mayor. In this case, we've got an actual mayor getting in Robert Forster's way and the big game hunter. And Robert Forster's character gets fired from the running the alligator task force, and they put it into the hands of the big game hunter. And then our Hooper character is played by the alligator and snake expert, the herpetologist, and a great performance by Robin Riker as Dr. Kendall. And I want to mention, as a weird side trivia note, that this movie is the last performance of the actor Sue Lyon, who had a really fascinating career. She starred in the incredibly controversial Stanley Kubrick movie, Lolita. Stanley Kubrick has become an increasingly more controversial character now than he was in the past, at least to some of the public. And Lolita is one of the most controversial novels ever literally written in the history of humanity. She was also a star in the fantastic film Night of the Iguana, directed by John Huston. So she had a really interesting career, and this is her last appearance on film. What I love about this movie is that it's weird. It has a really kind of oddly epic feeling sweep, which is not something you get from creature features, generally speaking, with, you know, not that large of budgets. Although the budget for this movie was $2 million, which at its time is not nothing. But it felt like it was trying to be an epic movie like Jaws. But then there were just so many weird B, C, D movie touches that you would never find in Jaws. So it's like a quarter Steven Spielberg movie and three quarters a movie that you would have seen on Elvira the Movie Macabre. And there's all these loud, ridiculous characters running around screaming things and getting hit by alligator tails and flying through the air and making stupid decisions like going into dark sewage tunnels at night where the alligator lurks. But then you have this really grounded, almost quiet performance from Robert Forster. And he's sitting at the center of in the hurricane. There's other talented performances in this movie, believe it or not, for the kind of movie that it is. But it's not just the quality of his performance. It's how he delivers it. He's just so, like, real. And even at, like, the most hype moments, like, the most excitable, like, moments, he just is real. He feels like he's acting the way you would act or feeling the way you would feel. And he's, like, a little bit of seriousness in the middle of all this absurdity. And it gives the movie a really unique flavor. And honestly, it helps cover up some of its special effects flaws, because even though there's some really good shots of the alligator in the shadows and the alligator lurking, any shots where the alligator is in action are like kind of ridiculous. But aside from Robert Forster, let me get to what I think makes this movie really special, which is the fact that I think modern horror movies have lost the ability to deliver us characters that we really want to see get wiped out, get eaten, get massacred. I think of like the Friday the 13th 2009 version, where they work so hard to give us like a really hateable character like Trent, and then other characters like, you know, around. And then we were supposed to be really excited when Trent gets killed. And it's like a sugar high. It's like junk food. I mean, was he annoying? Yes. Was I happy when he, you know, got, you know, thrown onto the antlers out of the truck? Like, yeah, I was glad he was out of the movie. And I think his character, like, you know, deserved, like, maybe no one deserves that kind of end. But like, if someone was going to, if it was inevitable, if you had to pick someone that because someone was going to go, you would pick someone so hateable as this character. But I didn't really care. And after it was over, like, it's fine. It didn't really feel like that special or that important. I think this is part of what made Godzilla Minus One resonate so much with audiences, was it was one of the few recent monster movies, where they got you so invested in the characters that you really were moved if they lived or died. But there's like a trashy version of this, and that's what Alligator has. It's so grimy. It's so the opposite of the glossy of something like Freddy versus Jason, where I don't remember who died when, nor did I care if any of them died. Movies from the 70s and early 80s, when they wanted to get really grimy and dirty, they wanted to get like Miss 45 on you, they would give you characters that were so hateable, but like in a real way. Like, you really want the alligator to eat the guy who's running around town kidnapping puppies. He's a puppy kidnapper. But instead of just the sugar high of, like, Trent's a douchebag, let's kill Trent. Okay, that felt good. Okay, now this character's a puppy kidnapper. They don't just give you the detail of what he does. It's how they dress him, the look they give him, the things they have him say, the situations they put him in, where you're really like, it's really satisfying when the alligator takes him out. There's a special quality to a lot of the good horror movies from this era, in terms of giving you hateable characters to get put on the hit list. The big game character in this movie, the guy who's an insult to the memory of Quint, and never should have been compared to him, I apologize, but like, he's drinking while he's, you know, on his big game hunt on the alligator. He thinks he's an expert, but he clearly has no knowledge of how alligators work at all. The things he knows are useless. Like, he knows alligator love calls. He's like doing them for the news reporters in a hilarious scene where he's imitating like horny alligators. That's what I'm saying. This movie is insane. But then he hires some teenagers to like back him up on the hunt. Like, who brings kids into a situation like this, compounding all his bad decisions? And then when the alligator takes him out and he's calling for the people that he paid $20, by the way, to help him on this venture, of course, they cut and run immediately. One, to his credit, one of the teenagers does a feeble attempt to try to extract the big game hunter from the alligator's jaws, but he doesn't try too hard. His other friends have already taken off. And this is all so satisfying. The rich guy who's throwing toxic chemicals into the water, making alligators grow huge in the sewers after they get flushed by their idiot owners. This rich guy is throwing this amazing wedding for, I guess, his daughter, I would imagine. I don't know. And then the alligator, of course, crashes the party, total mayhem, but in the most amazing moment, takes the rich guy out in his limo, crushing the limo with its tail. Like, he uses his tail to turn the limo into the Christine cube from the end of Christine. It's amazing. Of course, the mayor gets eaten, which, oh my God, that should have happened in Jaws. How did Spielberg not do that? Another super weird thing about this movie is they make Robert Forster's character like really toxic at times, like egocentric, like constantly talking about, oh, this is my career does this and my job did that to me and like whatever. And then just randomly lashing out at his girlfriend who's done nothing to deserve any of this. And then also equally randomly apologizing to her. And it's just so bad because it doesn't fit Robert Forster as an actor at all. And somehow he sells it and somehow they sell it. I don't know how, it's amazing. I like when a writer in a movie just gives up and says the quiet part out loud. There's this amazing moment after Robert Forster's insulted Dr. Kendall and then tried to reunite with Dr. Kendall and apologize to her. And after all this, she just looks at him and she's like, well, I find all this really confusing. It's like a cry from the soul of the writer saying, I'm not good enough to do this. I'm not good enough to make this believable. Like, why would a guy be like a total douche in one scene and then like a prince the next scene in a creature feature? It's not like this is like an A24 movie. It's not like we got a psychological drama going on here. But I love that the character just confesses the writer's helplessness. Like, this is just all so confusing. It would be like a Rob Zombie character just taking a timeout in a scene and going, you know what I think this moment really requires? A fuck ton of profanity. I like when writers talk directly to us, the audience. I love Alligator, mostly because I love Robert Forster, but also because when movies from this particular era in this kind of genre got it right, there was just nothing like them. The next creature feature I want to shout out is a Blumhouse film that came and went with like no notice in 2019 called Sweetheart. It primarily stars Kiersey Clemons as Jen and a monster. I mean, this is the Castaway of horror movies, so we don't got a lot of characters. Some other people come in at the end. I don't want to spoil this one because I have a feeling a lot of people haven't seen this, but there are other actors present, but they don't get a lot to do. It's mainly the Kiersey Clemons show. I love when a movie has a scene so iconic that all you have to do is say the words or a word, just a word that happens in the scene. And everyone who's seen the movie knows exactly what you're talking about and knows that it's the best moment in the movie. And even if I say the word now, it's a spoiler. Because if you haven't seen it, I want you to just come fresh, not knowing to the moment. So don't look it up. Just go watch this. It's a great movie. But when I posted about this, when I asked the question about creature features and people were talking about Sweetheart in the comments, there were so many people who brought up one particular scene. And the word that they use starts with the letter F and ends with the letter E. And you'll know if you've seen the movie what I'm talking about. But poor Jen in this movie has been washed up on a beach. We don't get a lot of backstory till the end about how this happened. She's there with a dying friend who dies on the beach. And then his body kind of becomes a character in the movie. His body undergoes quite the journey in this film. But now Jen is stranded on this beach. She's got to stay alive. And as if being stranded alone on a seemingly deserted island isn't bad enough, there's a huge hole in the bottom of the ocean floor a little ways off the beach that she discovers. And it's clear that through this hole, night after night, comes a monster like Grendel from Beowulf style to come hunt this island. And now she has to not only survive the being on an island with no food and water, she has to, it's like Naked and Afraid, except for she's dressed, but instead of being naked, she's got to deal with a fucking monster, like Pumpkinhead style. Now, there's a few things here that are great about this movie that I can tell you without spoilers. One is, it's daylight horror, and we don't get enough of that. You know, we have Texas Chainsaw Massacre, we have Midsommar, we have like, you know, there's some examples of this, but like really, really bright, really well done horror like this. Because I'd say Sweetheart is significantly a better movie than The Shallows. The Shallows is fun. But The Shallows feels glossy and music video-y, whereas Sweetheart feels like you're actually watching a person fight for their life in an ironically beautiful setting. Kiersey Clemons' performance is great. First, she gets to just act Tom Hanks Castaway style, where you're just getting a lot of this without dialogue, just with body language, etc. But later on, she becomes a much more complicated character than I would have expected from the setup for this movie. And then the other thing the movie massively gets right is the monster itself. It looks great. The monster reveal is great. The fights with the monster, the kills, all of that. Just top-notch stuff. Sweetheart is an excellent creature feature that deserved a wider audience. And the last personal choice I want to talk about is Burning Bright, a killer tiger movie from 2010. God, I love this movie. I've seen it like 3 times. And even though it stars a kid that they try to make as annoying as the kid from The Babadook, which I'm sure is going to scare some of you off from watching it, it's really good. Brianna Evigan gives a great performance. We get a serviceable performance from Garrett Dillahunt as the husband. I'm trying to give any spoilers here. And then an epic beginning performance. I wish they used him more in the film, from Meatloaf. But oh my God. The opening scene to this movie, where Meatloaf is bringing this killer tiger to sell to this husband who's trying to start a safari park in a desperate bid, he says, to make some money for his family by opening like an exotic animal park in Florida. But he seems to want a really scary tiger. He says the tourists really want to see the scary animals. And they get into this discussion whether the tiger's scary or not. And Meatloaf gives this amazing monologue about how the tiger isn't just frightening, he's evil. I can't do justice to it by quoting it. It's just, it's chef's kiss. But the two really special things about this movie are the scenes they set up with the tiger, and particularly this laundry chute scene, where the tiger is in on the bottom floor hunting for Brianna Evigan, and she's hiding above him in a laundry chute, desperately trying to just use her bare hands and feet to go up on this slick steel surface, and while she keeps sliding down, going up, sliding down, while the tiger is hunting below. It's exquisite. This is such a good scene. So tense, so memorable. Such great visuals, just like absolutely everything you want out of a creature feature is in this sequence. And the other thing is, the whole thing is set in, and the plot is driven a lot by the fact that the characters are trapped in their house by a hurricane. And I just don't think hurricanes are used enough in horror movies, or tornadoes, or any kind of like windy atmospheric weather. Like, I remember watching Equalizer 2. Now, I know this is a digression, not horror, but I remember watching Equalizer 2 and thinking, yeah, this isn't as good as the first Equalizer. You know, Denzel is great as always, but, like, I don't know. It feels a little more generic, not as good, like, whatever. And then the final set piece action sequence is set while this howling hurricane is happening. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is so good. It's so great. We saw it with the horror movie Crawl, of how a hurricane can become almost a character in a film. And Burning Bright uses the hurricane background and setting to such good effect. I'm just such a sucker for a good hurricane setting. It's why Key Largo is one of my favorite film noirs. And Burning Bright gives us a takedown of a hateable character. And you'll see, because I love Burning Bright. I think it's really good, but it's not as satisfying as what Alligator does. That's why I'm telling you, like Alligator is special in the hateable characters kills department. But Burning Bright's is pretty good. Now let's get to the voting at what you all said. I guess unsurprisingly, because I put it in the picture and I might have steered the voting. I'm sorry. I didn't know any other way to present it. It wasn't the only movie I had in the picture, but it was a representative one. The movie that got the most votes for favorite underrated creature feature was Crawl. And, you know, there were some votes for Lake Placid. There were some votes for Rogue, which is an excellent Australian killer crocodile film. Actually, I should be accurate about this. The question I asked was, what is your favorite lesser known creature feature, which might be different than underrated. So I'll have to correct that in the title now that I think about it. But anyway, the second place vote getter is the movie The Bay, which is this like plague-ridden found footage movie by you. The director of this is Barry Levinson. Now, a grimy, bleak, nihilistic found footage horror movie from Barry Levinson is not something I would have had on a bingo card, because he also directed Rain Man, Good Morning Vietnam, and The Natural. So amazing that he showed up in the horror genre. And a really good, if like such a depressing movie amongst all these other like fun like creature features we've been talking about. And there was a kind of tie for third place. We had Deep Star 6, we had Deep Rising, and we had Underwater. So creature features in aquatic settings are clearly strong contenders in the lesser known creature feature bucket. I wanted to shout out this amazing vote from David Joshua Smith, who voted this forgotten gem from 1979 is a glorious and occasionally glorious silly monster movie. He's talking about Prophecy. Then he says, featuring a stacked cast, Armand Asante is a Native American? An overqualified director, John Frankenheimer, and great kills and creature effects. The sleeping bag death is fantastic. There are a good amount of votes for The Relic and also for Troll Hunter, which is another fantastic found footage film. Neil Rickman, who's in our subscriber supporter group, thank you for supporting us directly. So appreciated, Neil. He said the little creature in the wall of Cat's Eye, and the cat pulled him in when he was young. I remember this creature. Cindy Batras, also in the subscriber group, voted for Them from 1954, absolute classic. And Richard Kreutzer voted for Significant Other. I have a lot to say about this movie. I want to save it for another podcast episode because my voice has just run out on this one. So we'll get to that on a later one. But I have a kind of love-hate relationship with this film. So we'll get to that in a different one. But I love it, and it got a decent amount of votes. But there were a lot of movies, way too many to mention. They got handfuls of votes that are just so fun, like Ticks. Someone said, I vote for Frogs. I love this ridiculous movie. I love when you're passionate about ridiculous things. And Night of the Lepus, just all kinds of fun stuff. Now, are all these movies that were mentioned good or bad? I don't know. I don't want to bet against a fun creature feature. I just want to take the voyage. I want to watch them and talk about them and have fun with them. Have fun hating them, have fun loving them, whatever the case may be. And that's it. I'm going to get out of here before my voice completely evaporates. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, everyone, as always, for voting, for the conversations and the reasons behind it. As I said at the beginning, those are the point of the whole thing. That's it for Lesser Known Creature Features. Until next Thursday, have a great horror week.